It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the latest edition of First Down Snapcast. I'm your host, Richard Butler, and joining me tonight is former NFL defensive player Michael Montgomery. How are you doing, Michael?
Man, I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing good. Weather's good. Sun's out at last, which is good for this time of year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
World's starting to come back a bit more normal, so it's starting to look good. We're not coming back as quick as over in America, but we're starting to see a little bit of normality come.
Yeah. It's the same. So hopefully everybody getting back to normal, you know, vaccines, everybody get healthier. So, you know, health is wealth. So.
I think anything's better than the last 12 months, hopefully. Yeah. So just in a bit of research, Michael, and to see you were born in Texas, school and college in Texas. So very Texan made.
Yeah.
So when the draft came up, after a successful college career at Navarro, then you went to Texas A&M. Were you hoping to be selected by maybe Dallas in the draft, or were you just happy to go anywhere? Would you have liked to have been in Texas, for being a Cowboy, or in Houston?
I would have been happy to go anywhere, to be frankly honest. It was just a lifetime goal, and and it's funny, I never was a big Cowboys fan. You know, I really rooted for players. When I started, like, learning, loving football, I started rooting for players. And I started, like, wanting to emulate them. So I would watch Michael Strahan, Javon Curse, Reggie White. You know, so I would, like, root for players on particular teams. But when my time was up, I was just excited to just be in the conversation and hopefully get picked. So anybody – or anywhere I was going to, I was just excited to be picked. So,
yeah, going back to your time at Texas A&M, you had a very successful time there. And I think in your last year, it was over, you had 7 sacks, 1 interceptions, and even put forward for the All Big 12 honors. So it was a very successful final year for you in college.
It was a very successful campaign. I only had 2 years. And I really couldn't play around. So I always just wanted to put my effort into it. I never considered myself was the strongest or the fastest. But if I know if my effort can show up, if I can show up on tape, just being around the football every play, my effort. So, you know, I think my I just tried to let my effort speak to my performance more than anything, because I never saw myself as this guy who was a pass rusher or a guy who was this run stopper. But I know if I put my effort into every play and try to play as hard and aggressive and as mean as possible, that it would all benefit for my future.
Yeah, definitely. I know we speak about it many times on podcasts, and we spoke to ex-players before. The percentage of players who even get from college to NFL is so small. So just to be part of that select group every year is a massive achievement in its own way.
Exactly. It's just blessed. I was visualizing this, being drafted in the league so long. Even when I start, loving football, I would always record the NFL draft. It was a lifelong goal for me once I started playing football. And I would record the draft every year. And, one thing I kind of understood that, it's about performance. It's always about numbers, what you're putting up, your numbers speak louder than words. So I knew for a fact that I had to have this many amount of tackles. I had to have this many tackles, sacks. I had to be, my numbers had to show for it. So even though, I went to the NFL combine and I wasn't that strong, so I wasn't the fastest, but I knew once they showed, looked up on my stats, that my numbers would speak more than my performance in the NFL combine. So that's one thing I kind of just harped on and pushed forward to. So,
yeah. In regards to where you were looking at players, and I say down to your stats there, because some players can have really good combines and not have the best, but the people who have the good combines don't always have the good stats to go with it. So when you were looking at your draft class, were you looking at the other defensive players who you were going up against and like, I'm better than him. I could bet myself I'm better than him. Were you looking at that kind of way, trying to figure out where you potentially could lie and go?
Well, I didn't look at it like that, because I knew I started only 1 year, because I was a junior college transfer. And a lot of guys who was in my draft class, they were starting for 2 or 3 years at a major Division I, getting all that exposure. And I knew for a fact if I would have just, stayed or maybe redshirted at A&M and started my both years, I would have increased a better chance. But I just looked at, just making the best out of my situation. So it wasn't like a me versus, the other D lineman, but I just knew, since they're going off a first one-year starter stats, that, wherever I place, I'm just going to have to make my way like I did from the rest of my career in football, from high school to college to junior college to A&M. So,
yeah. So in the sixth round, you were picked up by the Packers, and you went to obviously a very historic franchise, and also a very cold franchise to go and play football in, compared to where you've done all your school and college. On a rival in Green Bay, what were your first thoughts? And when you walked into that locker room for the first time around like the OTAs and mini camps, was it like, I've made it, I'm here now, it's time to put my numbers on field?
It was a very humbling experience being in locker rooms. And I know that, a lot of things people don't talk about is, you actually have to make the team. Not everybody is guaranteed a spot who gets drafted by that team, especially in the lower rounds. Like we could say, third round and up, third, second, and fourth, first, you're automatically guaranteed to make the team. But when they talk about the player, the people who get picked, from fifth round on down, you really have to solidify and work hard and make your, and free agents as well. So you really have to prove yourself in practice and in preseason games to make the team. So I was excited to be drafted, but I knew I had a lot of proving to do to make the final 53 roster. So I was very excited, but I just knew that I have to just prove myself again So it just kept me motivated and kept me grounded on what I needed to do during training camp.
Yeah. Once you're allowed, did you get any like words of wisdom or anything from any of the pros from the first team? When, because obviously I know you speak to people and say when the rookies turn up, there's always the veterans of the team always like to have a word and welcome in. Did you get that same kind of treatment in Green Bay from some of the veterans?
Well, it was, there was one player who, because I always had effort, you know, I always played hard. And there was, I didn't need teaching on effort, maybe technique and ways of winning the game. There was a guy who pulled me aside because, you know, I was a rookie, and I remember I had a big fight in a practice because an old lineman did something, and you know, I remember and Kabir Bajamila, he pulled me to the side and he said, "Hey man, what are you doing?" I was like, "Look, man, I came in. I ain't trying to get disrespected. Woo, woo, woo." He said, "Dude, if you would have landed your fist on his helmet during a practice fight, you could have broke your hand and you could have got cut from the team based off that. You know, doing silly, stupid stuff, because you know I was a very rowdy type of guy, especially my first year. I didn't want to take no crap from nobody." But he told me, you know, to keep your composure. To think, you know, your body, you know, you can't put your body in harm's way, you know, even to a little scuffle with an offensive lineman in practice. So, you know, the win, you know, win in practice, win during pass rush drills, win, you know, beating them and making a tackle on them on an offensive line. So that's how you win in the game. Winning, fighting an offensive lineman because he did some a cheap shot or anything like that, that's not how you're going to win, because you could seriously injure yourself punching his helmet or punching his pads or something. Anything could have got caught. So you could have broke your hand or broke your fingers. So the proper way to win is win during, you know, team drills against him instead of, you know, a fight. So that was one of the veterans who taught me, because you know I didn't have any effort problems. It's just the knowledge of the game and how to properly win.
Yeah, I can imagine that's quite good advice as well. I say, because all you want to do at the end of the day is you're trying to get yourself in there, and then the slightest things like that could potentially disrupt. And like I say, you could have got cut. So definitely good words of advice. Your first couple of years in Green Bay, you served as a backup in your position, and obviously coming in and out when you could. When you first stepped onto the field, how was it, especially at Lambeau as well? What was it like when you first made a position as a pro?
Oh man, it was such an exciting feeling. I always called Green Bay. The college and my professional teams I played for, I think they mirrored a lot. I always called Green Bay a professional Texas A&M university team. So they always mirrored a lot. So it was very exciting for all my hard work, for me to make a play, to your name to be called. You know, it was just a very exciting feeling for, you know, from coming from a kid to telling people I was going to be a professional athlete in the NFL to for my words, I spoke life to my words, and it just all came to the forefront. And, you know, every game, before every practice, I would always, you know, pray and thank God for this opportunity and then take it lightly. So it was I was very blessed.
Yes, you definitely. And you also at Green Bay as well, obviously a lot higher. You probably played in one of the hardest divisions as well in the NFL. It's very close rivalries in that north.
Intense. Always intense. I mean, playing from Detroit, then Chicago, then Minnesota, you know, we was playing against, you know, big time players every game, you know, from Adrian Peterson. Then we play Dallas, Terrell Owens. You know, every game, you know, you're playing against you know, Hall of Famers, you know, from New York Giants, you know, so it was the competition was very steep and very highly competitive. So
your big sort of big run in the team came in 2008 due to injuries and releases. You split a lot of the defensive work with Jeremy Thompson, and it was quite a successful year in numbers as well for you that year. And like you say, going back to your college days, and you knew your numbers, so obviously it was just a case of you knew, bide your time, and when you got that opportunity, you were going to make your numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. I always just tried to hang my hat on effort. Fortunately, you know, when I first got to Green Bay, you know, I was behind, you know, all pro defensive ends in their prime. Kabir Bajamela and Aaron Campman. They was both coming off Pro Bowl seasons, and they was both competing for the sack leader every year. So when Kabir got released and Campman got hurt, I had my opportunity to play. And knowing that, just to, like I said, you know, let my effort speak, you know, technique, and just get after it, show what I could do as a starter.
Yeah, it's definitely seize that opportunity, and when you're confident in what you've done, you know it's just all going to fall into place. Because sometimes nowadays, I'm not saying current NFL players are quite diva-ish and quite, if it's not going their way, they're quite on social media. Back before your time as only NFL, you literally showed what you could do on the field. Whereas now it's very much driven by social media. If you're not playing, you get very unhappy and you try and force trades out. It's biding your time and, like you say, showing your effort on the pitch and knowing you know you can do the job. It'll translate to wins and results on the field.
Exactly. Every time I do like speaking and stuff like that for people, I always tell, you know, don't get football a little too confusing about the game of football. It's at the end of the day, it's still a collection of one-on-one battles being won, you know, and, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, are you beating the person in front of you? And whoever wins the most one-on-one battles collectively is the one who wins the games. So football is not that. Just try not to make it too complicated, because it's still, you know, you versus the person in front of you type of atmosphere, type of game. So
it's good. It's obviously a couple of years stayed in Green Bay, and then in 2010 you signed with the Minnesota Vikings, and you went in the off season. So obviously you went into all the camps and everything, and you were on about there before as a rookie. It's about making that 53. Now, so you didn't make the 53 with the Vikings. Was that quite a surprise to you with all the what you'd done previously and stuff, and from how you speak about how you put yourself to it? Were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised, because, you know, that defensive line in Minnesota, man, they were stacked. I mean, everybody was some ballers, man, from the Williams, from Kevin Williams, from Pat Williams, all pro. Then they had Jason Allen, who was all pro. And they had Ray Edwards, who was, he was on the verge of being all pro, at, you know, coming off, you know, an 8 or 9 sack season. So, and then they had B-Rob Robinson coming off. So, and I wasn't surprised. And then they drafted Everett Griffin. From Minnesota. He's, you know, he was a rookie that year and he was very talented. So I wasn't shocked about, you know, but I knew that, you know, I performed well in the preseason, that, you know, what I did was going to, you know, get me noticed. So.
No, like, so you knew and exactly what you'd done, even if you didn't make the cut, you were still happy with yourself, like you'd done best what you could do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing, you know, after a while, because I always, you know, in my earlier years, I would worry a lot, even though I would perform well and I would make, you know, stats, I would get sacks and tackles and stuff like that during the preseason. I would still worry about my status on the team. And me being, you know, later in my veteran years, to know that, you know, regardless of what happens, as long as I put good tape out there, I will still have an opportunity to play football. So me being a veteran, you know, my fifth year, knowing that regardless of what happens, as long as I put good tape out there, that's the best I could do. And I let everything else work itself out.
Yeah, so you went back to Green Bay for a couple of months after not making the Vikings team, played a couple of games before finishing your NFL career in Green Bay, before moving on to some other projects we'll speak about in a minute. Was it quite fitting for you to finish your last NFL team to be Green Bay, with that's where you started your chapter?
Yeah, it was great. It was a great finish. Not the way I wanted to finish, but just starting with the team who believed in me and picked me up was, really great. The team was a great organization, great people. And I remember Aaron Rodgers on one interview, he said, you know, it's the people that makes the organization. And he's 100% right. For me going from Green Bay and playing in Minnesota and doing other visits to other teams, you know, understanding like how the atmosphere, the people, the facilities is way better in Green Bay, and the people there. It's just a very tight, family-oriented atmosphere in Green Bay.
And it's obviously from the outside here in the UK, we see all these teams, they're all run by these billionaire owners, but you see, Green Bay are a family team, aren't they? Because they're owned by the supporters at the end of the day, so they've got that better connection probably than all the other 31 teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They do have an owner, but they have it's still an owner, but it's still like more shares in the team, so it's still more family oriented. You know how they do the shares and stuff with the organization. So it's still a great place. You know, very town. The town makes it because you know it's not a big major marquee city like Dallas or Houston or Los Angeles, but a very small knit town, and the stadium is like right in the middle of downtown, right when we turn into the leaving the airport. So it's a very, I think the people and the fans that would really make the organization sweet.
Yeah, there was once a documentary in the UK that it was showing Green Bay. It was effectively saying when children are born in Green Bay, they automatically get put onto the season ticket waiting list because it's that long. You need to go on at birth.
Yeah, that's what they say. It's a long wait list. And the one thing I learned coming back that, you know, Green Bay, they make so their fans, their ticket sales, they're like the top three in sales, you know, behind, you know, I'm sure the Cowboys are probably number one, but the fans and the support is always there. So.
Just before we move on, so who would you probably say your toughest NFL opponent was to play against or came up against?
I think my toughest was maybe Matt Jones from Seattle. He was, for a guy that big and somebody who could move that nimble, he was like probably the most toughest I ever consistently played against a lot, because a lot of times we would meet in playoff games or regular season games, and he was probably the toughest opponent I ever went against, who I would always, you know, oftentimes see. And because a lot of times linemen, they're not that quick, but back then he had the size and the speed to match with, and you really had to be crafty to him and Brian McKinney. I said him and Brian McKinney from Minnesota. You know, you really had to be smart on your toes to get past, you know, a 6'8" offensive lineman that's just as fast as you is. So, you know, you really had to be on your cues with your technique and your speed and your angles on how to win against a very bigger, larger person.
But playing them kind of players also elevates your game, doesn't it? Because you know,
it
makes you better as a player.
Exactly. You're a competitor, and you want to just go out there and try to compete and win. So, and like I said again, you know, football is always, you know, that the collection of one-on-one battles, and you just want to win. So,
yeah. So after your NFL career in 2011, you moved to the United Football League with the Las Vegas Locomotives and had quite a successful season in reaching the final. How did this competition differ from the NFL? Was it as intense, or was it like a bit more relaxed kind of atmosphere?
It was similar. It wasn't as tense it was more like a arena style league, you know, how everything was spaced out and everything. And I really had a great time. I finished second in sacks that season. I really had a great time. I was in Vegas in my mid 20s. So, you know,
I was going to say, what was that like?
Yeah, enough said. I was the most popular person in my family during that time. Everybody would come visit me when I was in Vegas. So, need to say, but I enjoyed my time there. Vegas in my late 20s. So, I really had a great time. I remember playing against Denzel Washington's son. He played running back from, I think, a team in Nebraska. And I remember tackling him and getting up, and they all like, King Kong and got on me. And he was like, come on, dog, you want to do Denzel lines while we playing against him? So I remember, and I was up there so excited. But I had a good time there. Had a good time hanging out with good teammates.
Yeah, and getting to continue to play football, which obviously is important in your life. So obviously a good season there. Great stats yourself as a person. 2012, you then went to the Canadian Football League, mm-hmm. joined Montreal again. Brilliant season, finishing 11-7 that year, and narrowly losing in the final to Toronto. Now, the Canadian Football League, obviously everyone sees it, but what was it like to actually play and live in Canada?
It was fun. I enjoyed it. You know, Canada is a very, I think I always view Canada as more like a Texas atmosphere, like Houston hospitality. Everybody's friendly. It's open, very well diverse. I really enjoyed my time in Canada. Again, football there was very like more offensive arena, receiver pass heavy type league. And, you know, the football is there is real. So it was very more oriented more to football.
What were the fans like? Because sometimes TV portrays it in a bad way. So like over here, you see the NFL fans loud and everything, but sometimes the coverage of the Canadian Football League sort sometimes just thinks like you're not playing in front of fans, yet the stadiums are full. But it's just, I think it's how it's visually brought to you as a package.
The fans were very supportive. It's always been a good deal when it comes to playing football with the fans. So it was always very supportive. The games were always live. It was very little drop off between, you know, the professional NFL versus Canada football. So it was very, very supportive.
Excellent. So after you venture into Canada, your football career was at the end. You ventured into a bit of acting, and you've done some other roles, and now you say you're speaking. Have you ever fancied coaching in the NFL or at college or back up in Canada?
You say it again?
So obviously after you finished, you did a bit of acting, you've done some other stuff, you're speaking. Yeah. Have you ever fancied getting into maybe coaching in the NFL or college or back up in Canada?
I thought about it, but, you know, at the time, you know, the so much time and effort into coaching, you know, you have to literally, you know, set aside your whole time, especially in the college level and in the pros. So I really didn't see myself. If I did do something, I'd do something more like a little local, like little leagues, And because I would do like Little League coaching, especially when I was in California, I had my own team, Little League team. And so if I would do coaching, I would want to do it from the from the younger level, because, you know, so much, you know, you got technique is very, you got to teach technique. And I think once the technique is there and the effort is, it should be she's automatic. So if I do things, I would probably go back to the Little League level.
Yeah. And there's not like you say with the NFL and the college, you're never at home, are you, if you ventured into that? So when you've had a playing career, not being at home, it's sort of sometimes you want to be at home with family, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. You want to be home with the family. And, you know, that's where my headspace is at right now. So, yeah.
So venturing into back to the NFL now and how it currently is, obviously still a massive Green Bay fan and follow him. How do you envisage they've been close for the last couple of years? Obviously, there's a lot of ifs and outs about Aaron Rodgers in the media, and we don't know how much of a smoke screen it all is. Green Bay, they're almost there. Had a potential on the crisp of that Super Bowl, aren't they?
I think they're there. It's just, you know, football is such, it's so highly competitive. You know, two or three plays can win or lose you the game. That's how highly competitive the game is, especially when you're talking about playoff football. You know, one or two plays, one or two referee calls can switch one game from one team to another team. And we've seen it plenty of times. So it's there. I think they're there. I think the players they have on their team, they're Super Bowl ready. It's just, you know, in a game, in a full 60-minute game, you know, calls, plays, you know, holding penalty can cost you at a very crucial time. It's just, football is the most hardest competitive game ever, you know, because you can lose and you're gone. And so I think I'm fully capable of the team they have with them, as long as they can keep everybody intact, everybody on the same page, that they're Super Bowl ready. Stay healthy is a key right now.
Yeah, they've got some, like I said, they're there. They've also got all the people coming back who opted out last year in injuries. They've drafted free agency, so hopefully it will be good. It's obviously an up-and-coming division in the NFC North, a lot of changes with the Lions and the Bears. But on the whole, the NFL, it's continuing to venture out. Obviously, we're massive fans in the UK. They come over every year. Obviously, we didn't get in last year due to COVID. It's growing. Green Bay have yet to travel. Obviously, we'll have to under a new agreement. How big has the NFL changed since you stopped playing in this short period?
Well, it's definitely gotten easier when it comes to practice. I mean, they don't even do two-a-days anymore. So I think as far as the practice structure, especially now they have 17 games instead of, I think, 14 or 12. So right now they're more on the preserving side. And I think they're not even doing preseason games. Preseason games. So, you know, for the guys who are free agents and the guys who are, you know, on the limbo of making a team, you know, practice is very important. Because, you know, that's the only tape you have, because there's no preseason game where you could just show yourself. So guys who are free agents and guys who are on the lower rounds of the draft, they're going to need to prove what they can do in practice. And because, you know, that final 53 is going to be they're going to have to make decisions before that first game. So I think the game has gotten a little soft and more catered to more to the offense, which I think is a little, you know, because a lot of times when you're playing defense, defense is about it's about intimidation. And when you're not going to get hit, or, you know, or not fear of getting hit, when catching a football or fear of getting sacked by a quarterback, you know, a lot of that intimidation goes away from the game. Because, you know, we all see team, you know, from Otwater to Ray Lewis, all the big hit defenders in the league that are really not a part of the game. It's all finesse now. So it's changed the game a lot drastically for, you know, to save the quarterback and the receivers. But it's still, I still love the game. Still watch it. I'm still, you know, in front of the two watching, cheering on my team. But it definitely haven't gotten a little too watered down for me.
Yes.
When it comes to how they coach, how they watch the defense. So I really wish it could go back to the old days, but those days are not on. And it's mostly like a money game because it's you want the quarterbacks, they want to see the quarterbacks, so they want to protect the quarterbacks and the receivers more than anything.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to hear that perspective from a defensive player. Because, like you say, it has become all about the quarterback and the star offensive players. And if it weren't for the defensive players, teams don't win. You've got
You don't win. You got to stop somebody. You know, you can't. You know, you have to stop somebody. That's how you win. People can't just score and score back and forth. A defense has to stop somebody for the other team to get a lead. So
yeah. It's frustrating because I say it's not yet quarterbacks, they are the star players, but it takes all 53 players.
Yeah, it takes every phase to be on his game. And right now, I'm currently writing a book and I'm exploring my times as a role player because a lot of times, you know, the role players never get their highlight, they never get their shine, their due, because you need all three phases to win a game. Offense, defense, and special teams. You need the role players that's doing their job. See, that's why the one thing that separates football from basketball to any other sport, everybody has to do their job for one person to get, even the receiver to catch a pass. The offensive line has to block. The running back has to block. The quarterback has to make a good throw to an area, and the receiver has to run a good route. And so it's all connected. And that's one thing I want to explore and just give out a due to the role players who made the big players successful in their piece.
Yeah, I remember reading some, I think Adam Vinatieri mentioned it a few weeks ago, that if it weren't for how the ball was placed, he wouldn't have scored as many field goals. So it goes back to the guys who are just holding the ball, but that's their part, that they've played that part in history.
Exactly. Like there was a movie, one of my favorite movies is Any Given Sunday. And Al Pacino, he talked about the game of inches. And the game is all about inches, you know, especially when you have two evenly matched teams. You know, every little inch, every little play, every yard, it counts. You know, so that's why I always say, you know, the way the game is structured, penalties and a holding call, any call, penalties or anything like that, it does play out in the course of a game. So it's so intricate on how a 60-minute game can go one way or another. Two teams, multi-talented, and it sways with, you know, penalties or, you know, any other things that go off in the game. So it's very highly competitive.
Yeah, definitely is. Final question. Will you do it all again?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it, man. That's one thing, you know, it was a dream. I would tell everybody all the time, you know, when I was a kid and people, even one of my best friend's dad told me, he said, man, I remember you used to go around high school telling everybody you're going to be a professional athlete. And even I was thinking like, man, this guy is crazy. And for me to just go out there and speak life into what I've done, I've accomplished, you know, through the grace of God, speak life into what I've done is just a humble experience. You know, nobody can take that away from me, regardless of, you know, what happens. You know, I set out a goal and I accomplished it. Even if it was for a short time, so.
But still done it, and again, not many get to do it. So you accomplished what you wanted to do, It's a fantastic story. Michael, I'd like to thank you for spending your time with us tonight just to discuss your career in the NFL, United Football League, Canadian football. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear your story.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks again, man. Yeah, appreciate you. You can all follow me. I think I'm on Instagram. I am 96GB. And, yeah, I'll be coming out, working on a little podcast and a book. So, yeah, follow me when you can. I really appreciate you. Just any way I can help, just let me know.
Yeah, we'll do it. It'd be great to read your book once you get it out there.
All right, thank you. Y'all have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Michael. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Cheers.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.